This is Abby, and you are listening to Upzoned. Got my bus pass, been a ride first class, street car downtown, where the fine ladies and the peeps are. OG said, don't hurt nobody. Looking this damn clean, got my fit on. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of Upzoned, a show where we take a big story from the news each week that touches the Strong Towns conversation, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Abby Newsham, a planner at Multistudio in Kansas City, and today I have a very special guest, Bryce Mortera, who is a member of CivCincy, which is a citizen-led group who advocate for more people-centric growth in Cincinnati, inspired by the Strong Towns movement and the Congress for the New Urbanism. Bryce, welcome.
Thanks, Abby. I appreciate the introduction, and I'm super excited to be here.
I'm very excited that you are able to join us today as somebody who is, as I understand it, involved in putting together the CNU conference and getting that organized and supported. And you also have, I think, a really unique background that I want to lean into a little bit today. My understanding, just from looking, Googling you and looking at your LinkedIn, is that you're very close to obtaining your doctorate in pharmacology and you're working in the field of healthcare.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm currently a third year student pharmacist, as we call ourselves. So the PharmD curriculum is kind of broken out into like science side, so like a doctorate of pharmacology, kind of as you mentioned, and then pharmacist. So I'm actually going to become a pharmacist here very shortly. I have one more year left of like clinical rotation. So super excited to get out into the field and kind of apply some of the stuff I've learned for the last like 7 years close to it. So it'll be a new time for me. But yeah, my passion kind of outside of that is really focused on some of what you mentioned related to like infrastructure, transit, biking, all that good stuff.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into that conversation, being engaged in kind of the planning of the CNU is no small feat. I've heard that it takes a lot of coordination, a lot of work. What has been kind of your path into these conversations?
Yeah, so kind of going back a couple years ago, I've traveled pretty much most of the state of Ohio. I grew up in north central Ohio, in a small town called Mount Vernon. I lived there till I was about 19, was starting to move out. And my goal was always to get to Cincinnati. I really loved the city and region. When I visited when I was, I think, 12 to see my grandpa who lived down here, I was just enamored. I thought Cincinnati was the coolest place. You know, growing up, my family always just went to Columbus because that was closer and, you know, the big city for me. I think it was when I was in community college for the first year in undergrad, I was going to COTC and Ohio State, like that joint campus. And I was just like looking, the drive for me was about an hour from my house because I was still living with my parents. And I was like, I got to do something with this hour drive one way. And I stumbled onto the Strong Towns podcast and I was like, wow, this stuff is like amazing. Like I never learned any of it in high school. No one was like talking about in my undergrad pharmacy classes. And I think as I began to like continue to get older and moved from central Ohio to Columbus to Cincinnati, it was always like with me throughout life as I was going through college and now in pharmacy school. And along the way, I was like, you know, maybe I should start applying some of this as it goes on. So once I got to Cincinnati, I found a good group of like advocates and just people. You just got to show up sometimes. So I think showing up to some of those meetings really helped.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what is important about just the Strong Towns movement in general is that it is truly not encompassed by just people who are quote unquote urban planners or professionals in the urban planning space, whether that's engineering, architecture, or government officials. And that's what really differentiates the movement is that, I mean, everybody has an interest in how their city is developed and invested in. And it's really important, I think, for people with all different backgrounds to be engaged in these conversations, which is why I'm excited that I'm talking with you today.
in the article that you brought forward that you wanted to talk about today, I think it feels very aligned with concepts around public health. So I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it. The article was published in WCPO Cincinnati by Felicia Jordan, entitled "Committee Approves $200,000 in Funding to Help Keep Red Bike Operations Running." So Red Bike is a bike sharing system that serves Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, and it has 70 bike stations operating 700 bikes. Unfortunately, in March, the bike share program's overseeing board voted to shut down the program permanently due to funding issues. Its biggest source of revenue, UC Health, canceled their sponsorship of the program in June 2023, around which time Red Bike was in the process of expanding via capital grants. And this created a pretty steep operating deficit in their budget. So since the decision, $450,000 have been pledged locally to make the program sustain for at least another year, including $200,000 from Cincinnati's Budget and Finance Committee. So that's coming directly from the municipality of Cincinnati. This funding would support the program for just 1 year, but it's unclear whether there's a sustainable funding source that can be established to operate this program long term. Generally, bike share programs are, at least from what I've seen, they're incredibly popular. Basically, every city has one, every major city in the United States and even beyond. But much like trains and buses, they don't necessarily generate the revenue needed to sustain operations. But they're managed in a very different way sometimes through, organizations that are outside of the municipality or even transit agencies. And in Cincinnati, only a third of the revenue actually comes from the fares right now. And the rest is coming from a mix of corporate sponsorships and grants. So I'm curious, Bryce, from your perspective, do you think that the bike share situation in Cincinnati is it reflective in what other cities might experience with these programs? Do you think it's just a fluke in how Cincinnati's system is being funded right now? What's your thoughts on that?
So over the last couple of months, I've actually been traveling quite a bit for conferences and whatnot. And every time I travel to a city, everyone knows I got to try a bike out. So I was just in New Orleans on Tuesday, and I tried out their bike share system. Got the app, put my card on there, tried it out. I got an e-bike, even though New Orleans is much flatter than Cincinnati, I must say. And it was really fun. It was very easy to use and fairly affordable for where I was going. I think Cincinnati's system, from what I've seen, I've tried this in San Francisco, I've tried this in Minneapolis, St. Paul area. It seems very similar as the funding mechanism is set up. So, right, you've got these larger institutions, maybe an anchor institution supporting the whole system, and the staffing and operations side. I think Red Bike was not unique in its reliance on one major institution with the medical center you mentioned. I know from just talking with folks who worked at Red Bike or were adjacent to the organization, their expenses were pretty substantial. It's not cheap to operate one of these systems by any means, but it's super important to maintain, right? Because we're going to have visitors all the time, especially in the summer months, that want to use this, as well as local people just use it to get around.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting question about, because it sounds like there's right now a lot of conversation happening in this space that I actually wasn't aware of, about how these programs really ought to be managed by municipalities or even transit agencies and cities comprehensively with buses and other forms of transportation. And right now, a lot of programs like this in other cities are being run with, funding from probably a major philanthropic institution. And that does create some level of instability, because there are a lot of, it takes a lot of money to operate just like buses. And these philanthropic organizations have, you know, shifts in how they need to manage their money and what they can prioritize. So I think there is something to thinking about transportation a lot more comprehensively and including the bike share. Maybe with the exception of scooters, though, it's kind of interesting that scooter companies seem to be managed privately, but the bike companies aren't. And I don't really have a lot of insight into why, but that does seem to be the case.
Yeah, I think there are a couple, like, I think of like the big cities like New York, Chicago, like San Fran, like those cities seem to do a lot more partnerships with like the Lyfts and the private operators than, you know, Cincinnati does for sure. I mean, we definitely have our share of scooter companies here in the area, especially with universities nearby. But I do think that there does need to be some sort of, you know, overarching, like more sustainable funding mechanism to which, you know, Red Bike can continue to do its operations. I think in the article they mentioned how they were having really high growth over the last year. I mean, 2023 was a blockbuster year for them. I mean, they expanded actually in a neighborhood pretty close to mine in Walnut Hills, which had traditionally not really had a lot of transportation options. You know, it's a food desert. At one point, it was a kind of a healthcare desert too. I'd done a lot of work in that neighborhood when I was an undergrad. So, you know, when they got four new Red Bike stations, like we were all excited, right? Like people were able to connect between uptown, like central uptown, which is kind of where the University of Cincinnati is, where all the hospitals are, to, you know, a first ring suburb. You know, it was really a nice connectivity. I can remember like earlier this, like in the warmer months of this winter, we had a bunch of people just go down my street with Red Bikes right next to like Walnut Hills. So it was kind of cool to see that the influence of that, you know, station improvement in that neighborhood. So
I also feel like these programs they're almost like the gateway drug to actually getting your own bike or commuting and using bikes more extensively beyond just weekend recreation. The first time I've ever used an e-bike, it actually was one of these bike sharing programs. And that now has made me want to get my own e-bike. And if I get my own e-bike, then I will probably bike a lot more in my own city and bike just for short trips. So I think there's a real impact to these programs that goes beyond just the programs themselves. They create kind of more options, but also they enable people to experience biking with a lot less upfront of their own cash.
You know, I had a similar story with the trial of an e-bike. I think my fiance, she grew up in Western Pennsylvania. So we go to Pittsburgh once or twice a year, and they have another bike share program there. And we took an e-bike, and Pittsburgh's probably just as hilly as Cincinnati is. Like I wasn't expecting that. I'd never been there before that visit. And we climbed a hill like it was nothing. Like we were going on flat surface, and we took the e-bikes up there, and it was really cool. You know, for me personally, like I had never really used a bike that, like as a kid, I hated biking actually. Like there was nowhere really to go other than like this one trail connecting like the park to another park essentially. And it was like unpleasant, but I've definitely leaned into biking more. I mean, I don't own a car anymore. I haven't had one for over almost 4 years now. And I just bike and use transit these days. So it's definitely nice to have options, right?
Yeah. Options are critical, and enabling people to have lots of different ways of getting around, it just opens up, it opens community up in a way that I think is really important. So from a public health perspective, what is your thought about, you know, potentially these bike share programs and these kinds of options being taken off the table in a place like Cincinnati?
Yeah, I think Cincinnati is pretty interesting. You know, I didn't grow up here. I've lived here for almost 7 years now, but I think I've got a pretty good lay of the land just with exploration. It's nice, very rich in history, lots of cool architecture, lots of just fun things to check out that are pretty cheap too and affordable. But, you know, there's a lot of inequity too. I mean, I think you see that really well done or really well displayed, like within schools here. You know, some schools are very well funded, whereas others are not, just depending on your part of town. And it also comes out, especially within, you know, the healthcare realm. So I've worked traditionally in an outpatient pharmacy. So, you know, if you imagine at a Kroger or, you know, whatever grocery store you have with your pharmacy or CVS or Walgreens, and, you know, working the counter, you really see what day-to-day life is for people, you know, regardless of their ability to get around and to make appointments to see their doctors. I think for what I learned in school, especially with respect to population health and public health, it really, we always think about, yeah, how can we approach this patient holistically, right? Like, we're obviously the medication experts, like, what can we do from a medication access perspective? But I like to think about it too in terms of, you know, diet and exercise. Like, these are the things that are crucial, particularly when it comes to like chronic disease management. So, you know, patients who have high blood pressure, diabetic, anything like that, which, you know, those are like some of the highest like frequency diseases that we're trying to face in the community. And, you know, they're so expensive, right? Like, I was just looking at some notes a little bit ago, you know, for our exams coming up here. And, you know, and I think for diabetes management in 2022, it was like the annual cost to manage like over $400 billion. And like, to me, like working with patients so directly and, you know, as a future pharmacist, I think it speaks to the nature of the problem of, you know, how can we prevent these diseases from getting worse and how can we really prevent them from happening at all, right? Like, our infrastructure all over the US is and North America is drastically playing into people's health and well-being. And I think that, you know, some of the work that Strong Towns does and in these local groups that, you know, like Civic Cincinnati, you mentioned, that I'm involved with, we're trying to focus in on not just symptom management. It's you're trying to fix the underlying problem.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I think I'm just thinking about kind of the impact of whether or not a program like this were to shut down. Do you think that if this were to shut down permanently, that there would be health impacts associated with it and some maybe long-term problems that are not really being foreseen?
Yeah, I think it is something hard to like project out into the future. But I mean, just speaking from what I've seen and what I've like experienced or looked into with Red Bike, you know, a lot of people are using it for entertainment, right? Like it's a fun mode to get around, to check out the parks and the different aspects of the city. But, you know, I think one statistic that was really interesting is right after like just enjoyment and health and fun was like mental health and like wellness. So I do think that, you know, this was a survey taken by respondents who were using Red Bike in the system. You know, if we see this not be able to find a sustainable mechanism by which it can continue operations, it will have some impact on people's just mood. You know, mental health is really important, especially, you know, nowadays post COVID, everyone's really talking about that. And I definitely get a great stress relief after a good bike ride around town. So I think that those impacts are definitely going to be, you know, maybe it's hard to calculate or see directly, but I do think that there's an impact to say that. But so I think in Cincinnati, like with respect to access and getting around, like Cincinnati definitely does have other options. We have our streetcar, we have, you know, our bus system as well. There's been a lot of investments in that, especially for the next couple of years, we're getting bus rapid transit. So, you know, there are those options, but biking is really some of that like last mile delivery to get to and from your point. You know, I always bring my bike on the bus just because I know I can get around quicker. I can try and catch the bus if I'm running behind. So, you know, having Red Bike in this city and in this region is incredibly important for connectivity. So
in a lot of places in other parts of the world, specifically European cities, I did some not extensive, but a little bit of Googling on how these programs are managed in other places. And it does seem that outside of the US, public money is supporting these bike programs, the bike share programs. And US cities are typically very or somewhat resistant to subsidizing them, which I think is kind of odd because we subsidize other kinds of transit. We also have something called the North American Bike Share and Scooter Share Association. And I was not aware of this, but they recently put out a very strong statement regarding the need to fund these programs publicly, saying that local transit agencies and state departments have a role to play to support this. So it makes me wonder if the instability around funding this issue might be more widespread than we may anticipate and be thinking about. Do you think that there is an advocacy group in Cincinnati that would be able to take this issue on? Would it be CivCincy, or are there groups that really advocate for bike infrastructure and programming that that may be able to be a voice to advocate here?
Yeah, that's a really good thought. I haven't put much consideration into that other than Cincinnati definitely has a lot of advocacy organizations. Like Civic Cincinnati, we're fairly new in terms of the like urbanism community here. Like we have Queen City Bike. We have a little bike co-op called Mobo, which I'm a member of. And just Red Bike itself too. I mean, they would come out to different events. I feel like any advocacy ride with Tri-State Trails, another group, you know, there'd be Red Bikes there. People would be using them because it's just a statement of our place, right? Like it's kind of like, this is our team, I guess, is a good Midwestern way to put that. Yeah, Cincinnati's done a lot over the time that I've been here with respect to making our transit system and options more available. Like we just passed issue 7, I think it was called, probably 2 or 3 years ago now, that really changed the funding mechanism by which our transit and infrastructure gets funded here. So I believe in the past it was funded from only an income like tax, but now it's focused on a sales tax, which to me, when I think about not only a diversity of revenue systems, but a more resilient system of collecting fares, or collecting revenue, potentially sales tax makes a lot more sense because, you know, people are always moving around either in and out of the city. Everyone's got remote work or hybrid work. So it's definitely changed and impacted how much resources and where those slices of pizza are kind of located. Right. So, I think the funding is continuing to kind of start to alleviate itself, but you know, I think developing and having a system that is not just reliant on one or a few different income streams, but multiple is really what we need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in terms of thinking, it's almost like the funding sources need to be diversified, but there's also something to kind of an umbrella approach to management of multimodal systems. I think here in Kansas City, our bike share system is, I'm pretty sure it falls under the umbrella of our ATA, our transportation authority, which, you know, manages the buses and among other things, they're also a development corporation. So I think there's something to kind of having an organization that is able to take these in, rather than having, you know, just a bike share organization that has to kind of stand on its own and advocate for itself. And there's not that full picture that like transportation isn't necessarily, it's not like you're just riding a bike all the time or you're just walking all the time. Most of us, you know, we're all walking at some point or another, or, you know, we may be biking sometimes and then driving other times. So I think it's easy for people to kind of think of it as like, well, it's all just one or the other, or black and white, but transportation and mobility is very, very dynamic, but it's not really managed in that kind of way, that it's this like complex system.
Yeah. It's, two things out of that I was just thinking about. One was really kind of tying back to advocacy, like, since taking in and starting or co-starting and working with Civic Cincinnati, like, we've really tried to focus on kind of being that umbrella group to have a voice for all, you know, urbanism activities and like some of these projects and priorities, to try and get more organization behind us and help people really focus on addressing and engaging with our stakeholders. And then the other thing I was thinking about was, you know, going back to healthcare, like, access and mobility are incredibly important for people to get, you know, where they need to get to their appointments, to have, you know, a healthy, robust community outside of just being in your car all day.
Yeah, totally. So we're running out of time today, but before we wrap up, I do want to ask you a little bit about just your experience being involved with planning the Congress for the New Urbanism, which is coming up in partnership with Strongtown's National Gathering in Cincinnati. It's what, 3 weeks from now? It's less than a month, which is so very close. Exciting.
Well, a couple other fellow advocates and I are actually going to be doing a little workshop focusing on highlighting some of the activity here in the region. I've been talking the last, I feel like, 2-3 weeks with fellow advocates just about what they've done. You know, we really want to make it a kind of a good reel of, you know, showing what the city has been working on and what all these grassroots groups have been doing. So we're going to have that. That's going to be a really great program, I hope. I've got Ern Tan and Julie from a neighborhood up in the northern part of town, kind of second ring suburb, that's all going to be a part of that. So I'm super excited about that. I think you had John Young on last week, right? Or last time. So I think he's probably doing a lot more than we are in the fronts of like planning the actual conference itself, but we're definitely excited to be a part of that and get to do some interaction with everyone and welcome people to our city. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Are you planning to participate in any of the bicycle tours?
I hope so. I hope I can, you know, lead one or do something. I definitely, every week, you know, I try and do a ride with some friends. Like, we'll try and pick a place. But this last semester has been a little busy towards the end of it. So I haven't done as many as possible. But we have this group called Coffee Outside that meets up on Friday mornings, regardless of the weather, right? Like, it can be really, really cold here or really wet with snow and rain, but they meet up every Friday from like 7 to 8 in the morning, and we just go to a new park or something to investigate what's going on, but we have to bike there, so that's the fun part.
Oh, wow. So rain or shine, yep. Hot, cold, yep. you bike on Fridays.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. I always kind of pick the days to go where it's nearby me, so I don't have to really go up all these hills. But there are some guys that will like several miles down from either Kentucky or somewhere else in the city to get to the park. So
I was exploring Google Maps a little bit, and it looks like Cincinnati is quite hilly. So having an e-bike would be pretty revolutionary.
No, and I really, fingers crossed, Red Bike will be up and running, but I think their target is May 13th, the restart operation. So that will hopefully be to everyone's benefit. And I think roughly half of their fleet is e-bikes, which is super cool. Awesome. So hopefully people will be able to take those around and get on.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting you in person in just less than a month. And yeah, very excited. Before we finish today, I do want to do the down zone, which is the part of the show where we can share anything that has been taking up our time, anything we've been reading, watching, right, listening to. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Bryce. What is your down zone for me today?
Yeah, I feel like anyone who listens to this podcast, it's like their dream, right? to do
the dream down zone. Yeah.
So I was talking to my friends. I was like, what should I say? Like, I do things outside of, like, you know, urbanism and biking and school. So I have been trying to read more. I've been reading this book for, I don't know, maybe a year and a half now. It's about Abraham Lincoln and his, like, leadership style. It's called Team of Rivals. I think it came out a couple years ago, but it's a really good book just talking about his life from childhood to leading, you know, the Union and their fight against the slavery. So it's very political. Like, it talks a lot about how he just maneuvered and, like, created this whole coalition group for his cabinet. And I'm just amazed even more about Abraham Lincoln now from that. So,
wow, that's interesting. I've never really considered the concept of a leadership style in the context of someone like Abraham Lincoln. So that must be a pretty fascinating book.
Yeah, it's great. My goal right now, and I've done this for, you know, that year and a half, is I read a page a night before I go to sleep, but I, like, can fall asleep so easily. Sometimes it's like a paragraph. So,
oh, really?
Like, yeah, it's like an 800 page book. I'm on chapter like 22 of 24. So I'm very hopeful that I'll finish it this year.
Well, it sounds like you've been very busy with school and everything else. So hopefully when you get done, you'll be able to dedicate more time to reading. But getting through 22 chapters of 24 is very impressive. So that's, even if it takes one paragraph at a time.
Sorry, my dog's roaming around. She's woken up. So
is that a dog? Your dog?
Yeah, she we've had her for, I think, like 3 years now. We fostered her for a year and a half, but she has a lot of health issues, so she's coughing.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I'm not recording at home today, otherwise my dog would be scurrying around in the background as well. We're a very dog friendly podcast here. Chuck used to have his dog quite often at the office, and he hasn't, at least recently, I don't think I've seen his dog in a little while. But yeah, my down zone that I will share, I think I shared this before, but I'm just really excited because it's Friday the 19th and I'm going to Spain tomorrow. So I'm leaving tomorrow and doing a road trip around Catalonia for a few days, staying in a town called Alot. And then spending another week in the city of Barcelona. And I just have a lot of my week is basically just booked out with, you know, looking at museums. I'm doing a hike to a place called Montserrat, which is it's a monastery that's outside, about an hour outside of Barcelona. So a lot of people get there by train or by gondola, but I found this thing where you can meet up at a point and you go to, like, I guess, a trailhead, or they take you there and you're with a group of people and you hike to it. And it's a 6-hour thing. And I don't know, I'm probably going to be kicking myself during it, but I thought, what the heck, that sounds like a pretty unique experience. So I went ahead and signed up for it.
That's so cool. One of the pharmacists I work with at our specialty pharmacy, she just is taking a month-long trip to Spain too. So you will have to give me the first lowdown on it, because she'll still be gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, awesome. I will be. I'll be back in 2 weeks, and then I'll be in Kansas City for a week, and then I'm going to Cincinnati. So cool. When I hopefully meet you in person in Cincinnati, I can tell you all about Spain by that time. And yeah, hopefully it will be a great time.
That's awesome. What are you most excited about in Cincinnati from your outside of Google Maps and whatnot?
Well, that's a good question. I've heard that the architecture is somewhat similar to Kansas City and even St. Louis. So I'm really looking forward to just walking around the city. I am interested in looking at or exploring kind of different neighborhoods. What's it called? Is it Over the Rhine? Is that the neighborhood that people kind of talk about as the place to visit? but I'm open to other places as well that are at least generally accessible from downtown. I'm staying in the conference hotel, so that's where I'll be kind of anchored. But I was kind of looking at like the botanical gardens even, or there's like an art museum that looks really, really cool. And there's a place called Piat Park that I marked on my
Google Maps.
It's like in the downtown area. It might not be something that is that much of a draw, but I'm kind of marking potential locations that I can walk to.
Yeah, and visit. I do that same thing. Whenever I go to a place, like I'm in the airport, or we have an Amtrak station here actually, which not many people know about. The Amtrak comes like 3 times a week. It's very infrequent, but it's kind of fun. But they have, I feel like one park you should check out. It is, you could probably take a bus there. It's called Bellevue Park. It is kind of closer to the botanical gardens, and I live in Coryville. So it's pretty close to my house, but it is one of the best views of the city. You can see all over the Rhine. You can see Northern Kentucky really well downtown. It's really cool.
It's called Bellevue Park.
Yeah. It kind of is next. It's off of Ohio Avenue, I think. So it's, okay. It's definitely worth a look.
All right. I'm making a note to, I'm any recommendations you have, if you think of anything over the next few weeks, I'll be at the conference most of the time, but I do want to try to save an afternoon or an extra, maybe even stay an extra day just to explore some of the areas. It looks like there's a great art museum as well.
Yeah.
The Cincinnati Art Museum.
It's awesome. It's free every day of the week. Lots of cool stuff. There's I think Rookwood pottery is displayed there, which is pretty famous throughout the world, I'm pretty sure. Like I saw some in when I was traveling this last week, and an art museum was like, oh, little taste of home is here.
Very cool. So, yeah, that's great. Cool. Well, thank you very much for joining me today. I'll look forward to meeting you in just a few weeks and seeing you and everybody else at CNU and Strongtown's National Gathering.
Yeah, thanks, Abby. It was awesome to be on the podcast, and I'm so excited to welcome everyone and see you all in person here soon.
Absolutely, and don't be a stranger. If there's other articles that you see, you are always welcome to come back on in the future.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
Of course. All right. Well, thanks, Bryce, very much, and thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Upsound. Let me show you what I'm about to do. Get down tonight.